getting the Senate working again would mean giving this person meetings, a hearing, a voting committee, and a vote on the floor. That's the way it's been done, and to do otherwise would be absolutely unprecedented.
The American people are in the middle of choosing who the next president is going to be, and that next president ought to have this appointment, which will affect the Supreme Court for probably a quarter of a century.
If the Stop Trump forces are going to have any hope, they really do have to beat Donald Trump in Wisconsin on April 5th. If they do, the chances that Donald Trump can get those 1,237 delegates before the convention go down dramatically.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. It is 5:10. It is Monday, March 21st, 2016. Welcome to another week. Welcome to our first Monday official of spring. It is here. We can't go backwards any way whatsoever, but maybe one more snowstorm, you think, before the warm stuff gets here? I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. The markets are looking good on this Monday morning. That's what we know for sure. Let's get right to the WGN Market Desk Intel. The Dow futures, as you heard Bob mention, are pointing upwards this morning, indicating an open that'll be higher on Wall Street later. The Dow futures up 42 points this morning. S&P and NASDAQ futures a little weak. Overseas, the European markets all appear to be doing well this morning, with the FTSE leading the crowd. The DAX is up 105 points. The FTSE is up about 226 points. In Asia overnight, the Nikkei off about 200 points. The Hang Seng and Shanghai both doing well this morning in trading. Here in the United States, we have a couple of things that we'll be watching for today and the week ahead. Investors will gain some insight into the nation's housing market this week. Today, the National Association of Realtors will release the number of existing home sales for February. On Wednesday, the Commerce Department is going to report on the last month of new home sales. Freddie Mac will release the weekly mortgage rates on Thursday. The market intel this morning includes the dollar and yen doing strong this morning. And markets in Japan were closed for the holiday, but in South Korea, the Hang Seng Index was up. The Shanghai Composite Index in mainland China soared about 2% as well. Chinese stocks are surging after authorities there loosened controls on investors borrowing money to buy shares, with other major Asian benchmarks drifting as, again, concerns about global growth and lower oil prices weigh on sentiment. Speaking of oil this morning, let's get a snapshot of where those prices are on the markets this morning. It looks like oil futures are about 50 cents lower, $38.94 a barrel, which is down about a dollar, which is about a point and a half. If you look at the percentage, look at that. Gold and silver also trading lower as well this morning. Here are some headlines from around the world this morning from the Economy Desk. Nissan is preparing to recall about a recall of 2014 Rogue vehicles to fix a fuel pump problem that can prevent the engine from starting or cause the engine to turn while the vehicle is being driven. The expanded recall affects some 46,000 vehicles manufactured between July 2013 and June of 2014, according to information the manufacturer reported to federal safety officials. Nissan says the affected fuel pumps have nickel plating that can flake and create loose particles that interfere with the pump's operation. While the problem is more likely to prevent the engine from starting, Nissan says it could cause a crash if the engine stops while driving. Online lodging service Airbnb opens Cuba listings to the world. The Obama administration has given the San Francisco-based online lodging service Airbnb a special license allowing travelers from around the world to book stays in private homes in Cuba. Airbnb was the first American company to enter Cuba after President Obama and Raul Castro declared detente on December 17, 2014. The online service handles listings, booking, and payments for people looking to stay in their private homes instead of hotels on the island. Cuba has become its fastest growing market, according to Airbnb, about 4,000 homes added over the last year alone. Also this morning in China, Facebook founder and CEO Mark Zuckerberg has had a rare meeting with China's propaganda chief, even as China authorities are tightening controls over their cyberspace. The official, the news agency there, reported that the head of the Chinese media and Zuckerberg had a face-to-face meeting in hopes that Facebook can share its experience with Chinese companies to help internet development better benefit people of all countries. Facebook and other Western social media, including Twitter, are currently banned in China. Also this morning in San Francisco, a federal judge has dismissed the bulk of criminal charges against FedEx Corporation in a case alleging that it knowingly shipped illegal prescription drugs. Senior U.S. District Judge Charles Breyer said on Friday that the government named the wrong defendant in an agreement that gave more time to file charges. As a result, the charges were filed past the statute of limitations.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Chinese stocks jumped today after authorities loosened controls on investors borrowing money to buy shares. Other Asian benchmarks, though, drifted amid concerns about global growth and lower oil prices. On Friday, the Dow was up 121 points to close at 17,602. The S&P 500 gained 9 points and is now up fractionally for 2016. The NASDAQ composite remains down 4% for the year. Futures suggest opening declines today for all three indices. The start of a new era in U.S.-Cuba relations has Starwood Hotels signing a deal to renovate and run three properties on the island. It's been 5 decades since American hotels in Cuba were taken over during Fidel Castro's socialist revolution. Mark Zuckerberg turns his attention to China. The Facebook founder and CEO has had a rare meeting with the Chinese propaganda chief, even as Beijing tightens control over what the Chinese people can see online. Facebook and Twitter, for example, are banned in that country. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. 520 new research suggests that a strain of ransomware which affects Mac computers this month may have been less threatening than initially appeared. Yet, its discovery points to the future threats for a platform previously thought to be safer than Windows. Ransomware is a particular kind of malicious software that encrypts files and renders them unreadable until the victim pays off a criminal who provides a key to decrypt the files. It sometimes usually between $200 and sometimes $10,000, according to the FBI. ABC News correspondent Brad Garrett has been investigating this, and he joins us live this morning. Brad, what is it that people should know about ransomware?
Well, that it's typically gets into their system, whether it's an individual computer or into a company system, via infected attachments and now even infected websites. So if you get what you think is a legitimate email and it links you to a website and you click it and it's got ransomware on it, you now have ransomware. And once you have it, it's very difficult to get rid of, short of paying the ransom.
Now, this has hit a few big companies lately. The BBC, AOL, the NFL say their advertisements have been hijacked. Who is behind this? Is there a one group that's behind it? Is this the new thing for criminals?
It's really a new thing for criminals that I think originally Steve got started with hackers. And now organized crime has jumped into it because it's just an easy way to make, if it's an individual, maybe $750,000 per hit. But if you do hundreds of those a day, that's a lot of money.
Are people paying these ransoms?
Typically they are, and here is the reason why, is that if your computer gets locked up and it's got sensitive data on it, it's got research papers, it's got photos of your family, etc., you want that back. And if you don't have a legitimate backup system where everything is backed up on another hard drive, the reality is you're probably not going to get it back unless you pay it, because they hold the encryption key. And it appears they, by and large, will unlock it if you pay them, because they want to go to the next customer. And if the word gets out they don't pay, obviously people are not going to pay them.
And we've been talking about people here, but there's one of the recent payers of this apparently was a pretty large hospital that had sensitive patient records. Is the FBI involved in this, and are they any closer to catching people? And is there any way that we can find a way to stop this?
I think the short answer is anything that involves a computer intrusion, we're just not going to stop. It's kind of like fighting organized crime, fighting crime in Chicago or any place else. You work at it, you reduce it, you arrest certain people, etc. It's just too big, and a lot of this is done through people outside the United States, in countries, even if we can identify them, that don't have extradition with us. But sometimes it's just really impossible, or close to it, to figure out who they are. They're very careful how they use bitcoins to get you to pay them, and they'll run that through a system where it's encrypted and move the money multiple times before it ultimately gets to the bad guy. Time-consuming for law enforcement, and they're just really overwhelmed with numbers as far as computer intrusions are concerned.
And the scary thing about this, Brad, is that in some cases, it is not necessarily confined to computers as we know them, the PCs, but there are also computers on cars, on medical devices, defense weapons. There are all kinds of things where they can hijack these, right?
Exactly. And there's not been a big intrusion into that arena, but I think we're not far from that. I mean, think about if you could take over how somebody's pacemaker works, or get into the computer of their car, where literally you don't have control of the car anymore. You know, there's a number of dark areas that this could go to that people are concerned about. And it's my sense that we, you know, into the indefinite future, are going to continue to play this cat and mouse game of, okay, they figured out this, we'll have to figure out a way to stop that. And it'll just be every day, it's going to be something new that we have to tackle.
One hospital in particular, I'm remembering, recently did a drill with this. They did a test with hackers, and the hackers were able to shut down heart machines and oxygen machines. That would kill people if that were real.
Exactly. And even take that a step further. Just think about if you could, you know, infect highly classified computers, like that run nuclear missiles or nuclear power stations. All of those things. You know, some of this goes beyond ransomware, but the idea that you could basically take control of data, take control of a machine, an apparatus, a defense, a piece of defense equipment, is a pretty scary thought. And that's why this is one of the reasons that the federal government now has invested so much money in cybersecurity, because it is the wave of any big issues probably down the road for us.
Brad, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about Apple versus FBI, because Apple will tell you, and the people who are backing Apple, that when you build back doors into things, this is what happens. It's a pretty fair argument, right?
I think, yes, I do. You know, people have to decide, Steve, what trade-off they want. I understand why we all want to be safe and secure and be able to have, you know, confidential conversations, but look at it from the other side of, if you have people like this couple in, you know, Malik and Farouk in San Bernardino, maybe a third or fourth person out there, it's unknown at this point to us, and you can't figure out who they are. Are they planning another attack? So it really becomes this issue of, I get that you don't want to create back doors, but there's got to be something in the middle, because you can't just shut law enforcement out to big-time critical issues. Because think about what bad guys could plan and probably are planning, and we can't hear them.
And if, you know, the other side of that argument then is, if you do build the back door and it gets out, if the government lets that secret go, you're going to have hospitals being shut down and people, more of these ransomware and God knows what else.
It's a valid argument. You know, and we've now reached a point in technology where, you know, there is no sort of black and white answer here. You know, what do you come up with? Do you allow, or do you is Apple, for example, ordered to come up with just on the iPhone alone a technique that will basically disarm the function where if you put in 10 different codes, like we put in our iPhones every day, that it will, you know, it will lock down and erase the data. You know, that's kind of what the FBI is asking for, is a way to just to stop that so they can figure out the code to the phone. So I get that if they do that, then they're, you know, will that get out, and then people will figure out ways to maybe. So, you know, we're not gonna have a conversation where we're absolutely, this is the best way or this is the best way. I'm only suggesting is that we have to end up in the middle of the road someplace just for our own safety.
That's ABC News correspondent Brad Garrett with us this morning, who's been investigating ransomware on computers. This is the opening bell, 5:28. Let's find out what's coming up in the news. And here's Bob Ness.
President Obama, it's his first full day in Cuba. Tomorrow he's going to a baseball game between the Cuban national team and the Tampa Bay Rays with President Raul Castro. But today they're meeting at the presidential offices and with some American entrepreneurs who are looking to do business in Cuba.
Thanks, Bob Kessler. I had a brain fart there.
I know who Bob Ness is. Yeah. He's a friend of ours.
Yeah. So anyway, it's 5:29. We'll be back with more on the opening bell.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
It's 5:39. If you were listening on Friday, we talked a little bit about airfares and how now is the time to lock in those fares if you've been playing around with them. We chatted with Rick Cini, the founder and CEO of FareCompare.com. Here's our conversation.
Yeah, this is sort of normal for the pattern now. Procrastinators are going to get hit. I would just note that if you continue to procrastinate, even on tickets you're buying in April, May, even in early June right now, just add about $3 or $4 to your virtual airline ticket every day you procrastinate. You procrastinate 30 days, it adds up pretty quickly. With prices going up across the country, it's just sort of normal as demand hits. You have sort of right after St. Patrick's, you have another sort of break point in prices where they go up in mid-May and also one on June 10th. So they continue to escalate for departures up until June, and then they're expensive up until the last week in August.
Some of these tickets are 73% higher than they were just a few weeks ago, aren't they?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. And a lot of that has to do with the cities that you're looking at. So different cities can be wildly different in pricing. That's why it's important if you're pretty flexible. I mean, if you have to go to Disney, for example, you're not very flexible, but if you can be flexible, you can find a deal out there.
And so what are the best cities? Let's say we did want to take a weekend getaway. Where would be one of the cities that we'd find a deal to go to?
Well, I'll give you a few examples. Like right now out of Chicago, some deals that we haven't seen in the past in the Northwest for April and May, which can be very nice there, depending on the weather there. Seattle and Portland for $217 round trip, pretty good deal. Also, you have Southern California, Los Angeles, and San Diego on some low-cost airlines, one of them under $120. If you go to a legacy airline, it's up to $180. Still a pretty good deal out of Chicago. And sort of the same thing to Orlando and Miami in mid-April. You're looking at prices right in the 150 range round trip. And then if you're going out to the East Coast, Boston, New York, under $160 round trip.
And if some of us are thinking of maybe going overseas for the summer or the fall, is that going to be out of our price range?
Yeah, not really, actually. Well, it's expensive if you want to go to London, Paris, and Rome, the three most expensive cities. But there are countries like Ireland, if you're going to Dublin, Spain, actually, Madrid and Barcelona, pretty cheap. You also have Germany, the Nordic countries, Denmark, Sweden, Norway, all the fuel surcharges are down a bit, and so the prices have dropped. And plus, a dollar is so strong in Europe right now. All your activities, if you're going to fly within the country or take a train, hotels and all that are really inexpensive. In fact, I just ended up booking our family trip to Europe as well. So that you should be starting to look for those summertime trips to Europe as well.
And if we're those procrastinators that have waited too long to get a ticket, when are we going to see another time and we'll maybe be able to find discount travel?
Well, if you're really looking for super cheap stuff, you can do low-cost airlines almost any time if you're willing to do that. If not, you're going to be looking at the late August timeframe when kids go back to school. That's when the prices drop dramatically, both in the U.S. as well as flying internationally as well.
Rick, I know you're monitoring what's going on in Congress. So we had on the show yesterday the folks talking about this, the Fees Act, the ban ridiculously outrageous, whatever that's called. But what do you think the chances of that is going forward?
You know, I've been watching this for almost a decade now. We're about to have our 10th year anniversary, and I've seen senators and congressional folks grab the mic and say they're going to pass a passenger bill of rights and, you know, stick it to airlines. I haven't seen anything or legislation that even had a chance. We did have a passenger bill of rights that went through New York and then was repealed later on just in the state of New York. In Europe, they have a passenger bill of rights with some of these things. I just don't expect this to get much play. It does get you in front of the camera if you're in Congress, but it's not going to play very well as far as getting actual policy approved and signed by the President of the United States.
Your insight over that time is very important. What is it that's stopping this from happening?
I just think that there's a lot of other things that people are trying to get through. Certainly gridlock in Congress is part of it. We've seen trying to increase TSA fees. We've seen trying to increase airport fees. They're not trying to remove taxes. They're trying to basically stick it to airlines. You know, every time a senator gets charged a bag fee, we see new legislation to either get rid of bag fees or tax it.
Are the lobbyists that are working on behalf of the airlines, is this
absolutely? Yeah, no, it's part of it as well. You know, the airlines are complaining right now because even on a $220 domestic ticket, about 20% of that ticket's in taxes and fees. It has nothing to do with the airlines. And in theory, they're getting blamed for it.
We've talked about this several times in the past. The record profits, they're making money hand over fist. At some point, is there going to be a breaking point on this?
I think we're close to it right now, right? We've seen prices sort of, you know, the four things that drive the price of a ticket are supply, demand, competition, and fuel prices. Certainly fuel prices are down low. Competition is greatly reduced with four huge mega mergers in the last half decade or so. So really the only thing that's actually keeping prices low is consumers' wallets right now. The economy's been tepid, GDP's tepid, and right now we have good demand on airlines because they haven't added any new aircraft or any new seats into the system. And until we see better competition and added seats, I don't expect ticket prices to go up much wildly, much higher. At this point, it would be flying only for the rich, which I don't think is going to happen.
Rick, safe travels, happy flying.
Yeah, you too. Thanks, Steve.
Rick Cini, the founder and CEO of FareCompare.com out of Dallas with us at Twitter, at Rick Cini. It is 5:44 on the opening bell, and Terry Savage is with us now, and she's going to be with us in our next segment. Good morning, Terry.
Of opening at the bell this morning.
And it's spring, so maybe we could talk about spring cleaning our finances a little bit.
I'd be delighted to do that with you.
All right, great. We'll talk with Terry Savage next in our next segment on the opening bell.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:49 on the market desk this morning. Dow futures positive, up 29 points. S&P, NASDAQ futures higher as well. Crude oil is trading lower this morning. Let's get more on the commodities from Orion Samuelson.
Steve, good morning and greetings from Arizona, where the baseball teams are practicing and the snowbirds are in town enjoying, well, 90-degree temperatures with a lot of sunshine. In the marketplace today, though, cattle traders at the Mercantile Exchange will be looking at that cattle on feed report Friday. They were expecting the number of cattle placed on feed to grow 8% over a year ago, and instead it went up 10% over a year ago. Placements in feedlots during February totaled 1,710,000 head. Marketings of fed cattle during February totaled 1,590,000. That was up 5% from a year ago. And in anticipation Friday before the cattle market closed and before the report, we saw a limit down move in May feeder cattle down the $4.50 limit, and June live cattle futures ended the day down $2.02. Keep in mind, it's a four-day trading week. Markets closed on Friday in observance of Good Friday. Have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You have a good day as well. It's 5:50 now on the opening bell. Let's bring back Terry Savage. Terry Talks Money on Twitter, at Terry Talks Money. And also Wednesdays at noon on the WGN Chicago Business Lunch. Terry, good morning again.
Good morning.
The markets are, the futures are up today. What do you think is driving investors? What's making them feel positive this morning?
So much money sloshing around the world has come to roost here in the United States, and certainly all that money isn't going to sit in banks at 0% practically interest rates, so it's moving into the stock market. That and the fact that there seems to be some disagreement about how much oil there is out there. Now, there's lots and lots of oil out there, but that oil seems to have made a bottom, and there's hope that it will stay above $40 a barrel. So that's got the whole thing going again, despite some interesting news, by the way, this morning, that Germany prices have fallen. They have deflation, 0.5%. So it's still not working in Europe.
The DAX is up a little bit this morning, but still not as firm as it has been in recent days. You talked briefly there about oil, referring to Russia last week, saying they're going to run out of oil by, what, mid-century?
We haven't heard enough of we're going to run out of oil. We now know that, first of all, we have all the oil.
Yeah.
Second of all, if they ever could get their act together, they could probably develop and use technologies. The world isn't running out of oil. That's 10 years ago. We're not running out of oil. Whether we're going to use it and or be able to develop it is another story.
Right, because we have...
Russia's in a little bit of trouble with low oil prices, so higher oil prices certainly do help.
And it benefits them to sort of scare everybody by saying that they're going to run out, right?
I think they may not be anywhere near the large producer they are now because they don't have the money to spend on technology there.
Right.
Now, we, of course, have spent plenty on technology. So, you know, I think 50 years from now, worrying about what Russia's going to be able to do, I'd rather worry about what the tax policy is going to be as we start going through this presidential election cycle. I think that'll have more impact on the markets than Russia 20, 30 years out.
You know, that's a big thing that a lot of people are dealing with right now is their taxes. And before the break, I was sort of kidding a little bit and trying to work in the start of spring to the show today. But
what a great segue that is!
is spring cleaning something we can do to our finances? And what would that be?
I guess I'm going to have to bring up my spring cleaning column. You gave me a great column idea. You know, I just have two quick ideas for you. First of all, because for this next two or three weeks, you are going to be forced to focus on your finances, everything you did last year and wish you would do better this year, there are a couple of things you should really get organized about. One is what you own. It's not directly involved with taxes, but the last deduction you can probably take of any meaning now is to open an individual retirement account if you still have some money. And most of the major mutual fund companies will still let you open an account with only $1,000 if you agree to an automatic monthly contribution. So if you're looking for deductions when you do your taxes and IRA. But that leads me to this is a perfect moment, not end of year when you promised yourself you'd do it in December over the holidays, but now to take a look at what you're invested in both your IRA or 401k. What are those mutual funds you own? You can look now. It's safe. We're now back to the highs of the past year, and maybe if you want to reevaluate the funds that you're in, you should talk to, if you're at Fidelity or Vanguard or T. Rowe Price, one of those big fund companies, this is a perfect time because they offer these asset allocation services free to the people who have funds there. So call their advisors. That's free. And see if you should move things around.
Is there also a good spring cleaning to be done with the way we do our finances? I'm one of those people that tends to put receipts in a shopping bag and stick them aside. Is this a good time to sort of hunker down and find a new way of doing that as well?
You know, this is a very personal thing. There are a lot of people out there, and I run across them more and more, that don't look at receipts at all. Either they scan them or they know that everything on their credit card is online and they'll deal with it when the time comes. The only receipts you really have to keep are the ones that substantiate a tax deduction, those you want to keep because it'll be easier to show the IRS if you ever get audited, and those that show stocks that are not held inside a retirement account because those you'll need to keep a track of the cost basis for taxes when you sell, or repairs that you might make to your own home that are significant and raise the cost when the time comes when you sell your home, and anything else investment related to real estate. But basically, we live in a far less paperful society, so it's easier to get organized. And if you have never used Quicken, for example, to categorize your money and your spending, you don't have to start at the beginning of the year. Actually, Quicken will go back, take your checking account and credit cards and go back 3 months. So go to Quicken.com and download just a basic Quicken. It'll help you be much more organized.
Some good advice this morning from Terry Savage. You can find her on Twitter at Terry Talks Money. And always Wednesdays at noon on the WGN Chicago Business Lunch. Terry Savage, thanks for being with us on the opening bell this morning.
Always. Thank you.
Have a great day. It is 5:57. The show is produced by Mary Sandberg with production help this morning from Ben Cortez, who's also our engineer. Thank you for listening. We'll be back bright and early tomorrow morning. We had hoped to bring you today an interview about SUVs with Ford, with an industry analyst. We'll try to get that going for you another day this week. We had some crossed wires with our guest, but we will again try to reschedule that for you. And we'll be back bright and early tomorrow morning at 5 o'clock for another edition of The Opening Bell. The Steve Cochran Show is next. I'm Steve Grzanich. Have a great day.